Hi there, we're the Two Fat Expats, and while we're ample in both personality and gusto, that's not quite what the Fat Expats are about. Fat Expats make the most out of expat life, filling it up to the brim and packing it all in while they can. I'm Kirsty Rice, an Aussie based in Qatar in the Middle East, and in a moment you're going to meet Nikki Moffat, who's also an Aussie, but she's over in Hamburg, Germany. Between us, we've been in over 10 locations as expats in the past 15 years or so, and we've learnt in that time that expat life is much more fun the fatter you live it. Okay, let's get on with it, shall we? Let's dig in. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. How are you?
I'm good. I've just tackled the Qatar Health Service this morning, so I've done a few rounds of the hospital. And if anyone hears a little noise in the background, it's currently time for the call to prayer. So there's a beautiful hum in the background that you might pick up here and there. But yeah, it's been a busy morning. What about you? What have you been up to?
This morning, I've been doing some very exciting things like household chores, like washing and folding clothes, and it's raining outside and miserable, so I was doing those things, which, you know, quite make you feel quite good sometimes. I fed the fish because the kids left for school without doing that, so, you know, it's the little things.
Accomplishments. You've got accomplishments. So we usually kick off the show with a what's hot in the group, and when we're talking about the group, we of course mean the Two Fat Expats Facebook group. Nikki, one that I thought was particularly useful this week was the best VPN. And I don't know, do you always think of visible panty lines when you hear best VPN? Because that's what I always think.
I never have, but thank you very much for that mental image. And now I'm going to be, yeah, that's good.
So VPNs are fairly commonplace in the expat world because people are usually putting a VPN on their computer to pretend they're somewhere else, either so that they can view what they want in the country that they're in, or that they can pretend that they're still back in the country that they're from so that they can keep up with whatever it is they're watching.
Or any other country they may have lived in.
Yes, yes. That, because all of a sudden you're wanting to watch, you know, a show in Canada and a show in Australia and a show in the UK. Absolutely. So, Nikki, VPNs are a little bit shady legally in some countries. So I was having a look on a website just recently about whether you could use a VPN in Australia. And technically, you could be breaching copyright by doing so. Like, I'm not sure if it's really legit for you to be using a VPN when you're in Australia. What are the laws in Germany?
It's my understanding that you can use a VPN in Germany. It's just that there are lots of things to do with streaming and downloading in Germany that people get in trouble for and actually get huge fines. So Germany enforces copyright laws out of the US and other countries very stringently. And a lot of people come here and they accidentally download something on one of those, you know, those sites where you can download shows for free and whatever, like BitTorrent or whatever they are.
Yeah.
They are highly illegal in Germany and people have been stung with very big fines for those. VPN, it's a little bit unclear.
Right.
The VPN itself is perfectly legal, but often VPNs are used to access things that aren't legal, and that's where it comes into the unclearness.
Yeah, and VPNs are handy for lots of different things. It's not just viewing television and movies. Now, Nikki, the ABC in Australia, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, is kind of the place you go for the really gutsy news and the really gutsy television. You know, they're not having fake news, put it that way. And, you know, Nikki, I remember when you and I became Twitter friends, you know, all those years ago, that was the bit excitement was if, because the ABC is always geo-blocked, so you can't get in and see anything. But if there's an election or there's a natural disaster or there's something that they feel that they can share, they will un-geo-block it. But, of course, if you've got a VPN, all of a sudden you can pretend you're in Australia and you're viewing. But here in Qatar, where VPNs have become very big of late, is, and they are legal to have here, is a lot of people came back from the summer break and all of a sudden they couldn't use WhatsApp and they couldn't use FaceTime without it being really sketchy and sort of cutting in and out. Now, being someone who works from home and spends a good, you know, couple of hours on the phone to Australia, I got quite panicked because I was thinking, this is going to cost me a fortune in international calls. But also it was talking to my kids in Australia because that's how we communicate. Anyway, the jury's still out on why it's happening here and why it's not working. And of course, you jump to all sorts of conclusions of political strife, but who knows?
There hasn't been any official statements then.
No official statement at all. Just an acknowledgement that, yep, it's not working, but not why.
Good to know.
Yeah. So I now have the VPN and now all of a sudden I can, it all works again fine and it's okay. So yeah, so there were a lot of people, it was Jillian that kicked it off and she wanted to know what was the best VPN and if anyone could recommend a really good fast one because she wanted to watch UK TV overseas. And the one I use is Strong VPN, but I'd also had Turbo VPN recommended to me. What do you use?
Well, ExpressVPN is highly recommended in Germany, and I noted that there was a lot of ExpressVPN fans as well that commented in the group. Mm-hmm. And it was also interesting that some people said that VPNs work well and then they didn't work well, so some people had changed over time.
Yes.
Lucy, for example, said that Tunnel Bear stopped working in Uganda, but ZenMate is okay. So if you're in Uganda, there's a tip for you. Not sure how many people are in Uganda that listen, but shouting out hi.
The one I wanted to understand was Sharon said she uses Dailymotion to watch soaps and film on TV. Now, that is one of those sites with the BitTorrents, isn't it?
I don't know. We'd have to look into that. So
yeah,
we're no, not,
I'm pretty
we're not...
sure it is. Okay. Not that I'd ever do anything like that, but... I'm pretty sure Dailymotion's got a lot of the TV shows and it's got all those little bit torrents. Okay, so Tunnel Bear was another suggestion and you've said ExpressVPN already. One of the other things that kept coming up is a Roku box, which is kind of like in looks very much like an Apple TV. Do you know those little...
Okay.
Yes, and I've had a couple of British girlfriends who've brought them back into the country here and they've worked perfectly. And I guess it's kind of like that Apple TV idea of is you plug in your Roku box and then you have access to sort of see all of that television. And so Louise in our group, she'd said she uses a BritBox and Acorn TV through her Roku box. She says, not sure if you can get one in the country you're in, but it does not require a VPN and all the soaps are up to date and there's heaps of UK TV shows on there. So that's definitely worth looking at.
So it's more like Apple TV and you would pay a subscription for the channels that you access.
I think you actually just buy the box. I think you just buy the box. Yeah. But if someone wants to correct me, I'd love to hear.
Yeah, and they're interesting. So some also people mention that some VPNs work to a country. So if you want to access sites in that country, but not for all the sites in that country. So that was another one about BBC in the UK. So someone mentioned that PIA and IB VPN are not working for BBC iPlayer, but it does work for other UK channels. So that's interesting to know as well. So I think the thing about a VPN is it depends what country you're in, what country you're trying to access, and how much you're prepared to pay.
Yeah. Now, I just had a quick look while you were talking. Not that I wasn't paying full attention, Nikki, I promise. But the Roku streaming players, I think you can get them for as little as $30. And it says there's no monthly fees for watching free channels. But then you've got to pay, of course, for your Netflix or your Sling or whatever it is that you want. So really interesting. Yeah.
Interesting. Something else in the group this week, which is access to things as well, but not the internet or something is access to books. So Kim Johnson, who lives in the Ukraine, and I think she lives not in a big city and doesn't have a lot of access to, she's have no access to an expat community or English school, etc. And she asked a question about books and what is the best way you've found to access books in English? So they have no real access to paper books in English in their town, so they do Kindles, and they've tried Kindle Unlimited but are pretty underwhelmed by the selection. They can check out ebooks online through US Public Library, but there's so much that's unavailable there too. So she wanted to have tips and ideas for accessing books, and once again the group came to the party.
Christina says that her US Public Library includes subscriptions to Overdrive and Hoopla, which allows her to check out a certain number of things, including books, audiobooks, even movies, free per month. So Hoopla audiobooks have changed her life, she says. Selection isn't as good as Amazon, but it's free, so I can't complain. And yeah, I reckon that's going to change your life too, Kim, because I think, is Kim American?
I think Kim is American, yes.
Yeah, and so now I know my girlfriend Lisa used to do that here as well. She used her US library card to be able to download audiobooks and movies and things as well. And I've got a feeling that if you happen to be in Qatar, where there are a lot of American universities, that you can then use those, they cross over within big universities here as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So Katie in Singapore also uses Overdrive with her Singapore library membership. So it sounds like Overdrive might be a sort of global platform that libraries buy to sort of help.
Now, Alicia said she uses Book Depository. It does a free delivery worldwide, and she uses that for Amazon Prime and for her English books. Now, I'd be really interested to know from Alicia whether Book Depository works for the Middle East, because we're, of course, a little bit funny about books here and things that are possibly censored or read before they make their way here. What was Kelly saying?
So Kelly said that if you're keen for new releases and unknown authors, NetGallery may be an option, but you may have to generally review the book after you read it. Publishers give away book galleys in exchange for reviews. So that's interesting for everybody, not just for Kim.
All right, now the other one that came up was the mail and bill payment. So once again, the lovely MSMG, Emery, who we've mentioned before, because she just asked the best questions. But she said, someone suggested we have a trusted family member handle our finances back home. Basically, give them a checkbook and make sure that they pay things that might come up here and there, and then let us know when they do. She said, also, we should have our mail forwarded to them and that kind of thing. And she said, the problem is we don't have a trusted family member who lives close enough to have to sort of take on the time to do that task. And she said, any suggestions on how to handle this? I thought this was a really, really good question, because I have been an expat for 18 years and my mother has been absolutely amazing throughout the entire process at just either forwarding stuff on to wherever we are, or catching, you know, as only a mother does, sort of catching the cover of an envelope and going, no, this one looks a bit suspicious. I'm not sure if I should hang on to this one. I might just open it and find out what it is. Like, she'll always message me and say, oh, do you think I should open this one? It looks a bit sort of official. And yes, I do usually like to accrue at least one speeding fine or, you know, some sort of parking fine every time I'm home. But Nikki, what do you do? What do you use? Have you been gone that long that you don't have that much mail from Australia? How does it work?
Well, we've been gone less in time than you, and my mum used to do it for us. She certainly did, and we redirected it mail to her somehow. Not where we immediately left. I can't remember. Yeah, maybe. I can't remember. But she had a PO box, which was perfect.
Yes.
Since then, I changed to my dad, and then my dad has recently moved house. That's not really working out for me. So it also depends on what country you have things. So we still own a house in the US, and we still have a lot of mail that comes there, you know, to do with the house, bank accounts, etc., that we haven't been able to put it all online. Slowly over the course of the year, we're getting less and less. So we have there a trusted friend, and she does the same thing. She photographs envelopes that she thinks might need to be opened, and she'll open and scan stuff for us, and then I can just pay things. She negotiates with all the local people that I need to pay things with, and then I just do that part of it. But so, yeah, it is a quite a difficult situation. Now, she also manages our house, so she's getting some sort of payment out of us for actually managing those things. She's not doing it out of the goodness of her heart. Well, I'm sure she would, but she's not.
Sue Dunn said she uses a UK post box to get her mail, where they scan it for you and then they Skype to make relevant phone calls. I thought that was pretty good.
Sounded like a great service. And Marianne said that she uses a similar service in the US called personalmailinternational.com, and says there are several companies that do the similar thing but have used that type of service for years. And they receive all the mail, pay any bills so it gets paid in time, deposit checks, clear the junk, scan it, and then via the web they decide if they want to trash, keep or forward, which I think is excellent.
Yeah, and obviously oodles of people said you've just got to try and get everything online that you possibly can. And I think we're almost there where everything's online. Because obviously when you own a house somewhere, it's scary canary of what is going to get missed and what's, you know, you're going to come home and the electricity's going to be cut off and the internet's not going to work and all the rest of it. Michelle said, I'm in China and the internet's fine. She uses a service called Traveling Mailbox. I'm now in year 4 as an expat. The first few months overseas, paper mail was a lot and then it died down, and now maybe I get one piece a month now. It's scanned, held, shredded or forwarded, depending on what I want. All else are bills and done electronically, or it's junk mail and the post office doesn't forward to my new address with the service. I must say, along with no voicemail, one of the more freeing aspects of being overseas. Yeah, I guess it would be. I mean, the other reason people really like to have a mailbox at home is for online shopping as well, because you can get stuff sent to you to be there when you arrive, or, you know, forwarded onto you in your new country. That sort of came up a lot too, where people set up post office box for that exact reason.
Yeah, absolutely. The other exciting thing in the group this week, which has caused quite a lot of discussion over the last day or so, is that driving is legal in Saudi for women.
I know. The lovely Rachel posted this saying, this is big news. And Rachel has lived in the Middle East for years and traveled to Saudi for work, and I imagine it would have been a really monumental day for her as a woman who's traveled in and out of the country a lot. But what I found really interesting about that comment was, so it gets posted, yay, women can now drive in Saudi, you know, it's all about to come about. What I hadn't expected that happened was the amount of women we have in our group who are based in Saudi but who said, yeah, but I'm still not going to drive.
You're never going to drive.
And they're saying they're not going to drive because it's just so crazy on the roads. Now, I want to say to these women, and I haven't been to Saudi, so I can't judge and I don't know, but this, you would definitely get the same impression when you come to Qatar. And the reason I'm giggling is because I had a visitor come through on Sunday over the weekend, and it's a really lovely lady, Mary, who has read the blog for years and actually was flying through on with her family on her way on her summer hole. And I said, hey, you know, I'll come and pick you up and you can come to the house for dinner. We'd never met, but we've talked online for, you know, 8 years. And I picked her up and seriously, on the drive home, I could see her visibly jumping, like, you know, as in scared. Oh, and we're about to get hit. Oh, that car's come too close. Oh, we've just about lost our side mirror. Oh, dear. And she was saying, no, I'm fine, I'm fine. But I knew she wasn't, because it's just driving is crazy in the Middle East. And there's all those charming things where, you know, you have the guy in the Land Cruiser driving at 140 Ks behind you, and he'll just start flashing his lights for you to just get out the road, which I keep getting told is not a way of being rude. They're just saying, hey, it's time to move out the road, please. And that's how I'm going to do it. But I would say I was terrified to drive here too. But once you start, you just become an aggressive, terrible driver as well, and you just meld right in. But yeah, Zoe said she was amazed by the news. She couldn't believe it. She left Saudi a year ago and also said she wouldn't be happy driving in the mayhem, but she was glad that at least women got to have the choice.
And Carrie said, I'm glad for them and for us. This means they can get more practice in their home country, so we'll be safer here in Bahrain when they come to drive on the weekends.
Yes. And for those that don't know, Bahrain is a big Saudi destination because it's just across the border. So is Qatar. But, of course, with our political thing at the moment, the Saudis aren't coming to Qatar right now. So hotels are very quiet on the weekends because we're not having the influx of Saudis, but I imagine what that means is there's probably twice as many Saudis going to Bahrain. And I had never thought that women who can't drive in Saudi would suddenly hop in their cars in Bahrain and start driving. Carolyn, I loved what she said because she brought it back down to earth and just said it's going to have a massive economical and social impact beyond our current understanding. I'm really, really pleased. And she's absolutely right. It really is. Our amazing group, Nikki, I saw you had posted a little glass of champagne that was sitting on your desk on Friday afternoon because you were ready to witness the momentous 3,000 member mark.
I was. I suddenly had a look at the group. I thought, oh, I've got nothing to do on Friday. Let's have a look at the group. Friday afternoon, no mates. And I saw, oh, we're very close. I thought, oh, I might pop a bit of bubbly and see what happens. And we basically just stormed through that. But I must have missed like 20 people joined in a very short time. And by the time I went to bed, it was well over 3,000, like 3,030 or something.
And how was that bottle of champagne? Did you make your way through it?
It was good. Well, no, because I had to stop at 7:30 because of my 16:8.
Of course. Oh, see, I haven't been that good. Oh, you have been really good. We should probably just do a very quick rundown of the 16:8, shouldn't we? So I have to say the 16:8 for anyone who's new is we're doing the intermittent fasting where you fast for 16 hours and eat for 8. Is that right? Yes. And Nikki, you are so good to do that on weekends because while I didn't eat after 8, I definitely didn't stop drinking after 8. I'd never thought that was a requirement. I went out for dinner on Friday night with some friends and yeah, it was all dinner was done and dusted by 8, but I was still having a couple of gin and tonics, which isn't really fasting, is it?
But how did you go this week? So have you had your weigh-in day?
Yes, weigh-in day this morning, and I lost a half a kilo this week. So I'm now at a total of 4 kilos that I've lost.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Good job.
Yeah, I don't look any different though. I think maybe my face, but that's about it. Clothes are still tight, but it'll come. Do you know, I've got, like I've said before, I've got a lot of weight to lose and I think I could probably lose 10 kilos before I really looked any different, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
How about you? How are you going?
No, I've been up and down. Again, I've been good at the times. I haven't been that great with the food.
Right.
And I've had a cold and so I haven't done as much exercise. So I'm just down a couple of pounds. Yes. Again, I like to measure loss in pounds, but that's really just, you know, a big drink or so. I'm planning on getting better, but I just wanted to be consistent with just sort of the eating pattern. So I got used to it. So now I'm really used to it. So the first couple of weeks I was really hungry when I woke up and now I'm not hungry when I wake up. So I feel that I'm getting more used to the pattern and then I can change my eating habits.
Yeah. And I reckon I might move eventually when I've got, because I was a massive overeater. So the fasting thing has been big for me for just getting back to eating proper sized meals and not overeating and eating all the time. But I'd like to eventually get to the 5-2, you know, where it's down to days and you eat for 5 and fast for 2, because I think I could do that and you would get sort of maybe a better impact as well. But I'm quite happy to just keep coasting along, losing a little bit, losing a little bit, losing a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about the group then. So we've got our 3,000 members. So something that popped up, you know, Facebook loves to suggest things to you, loves to suggest things. So it suggested to me that I join a group for expats in Port Moresby. And I thought, That is the strangest thing I've ever seen. I thought, why would Facebook ever suggest that to me? So I thought about it, and then I went into our group, the Facebook group, Two Fat Expats, and I went to the About the group and had a look. And we have 54 members in Port Moresby.
That's a lot of people. Hello. Hello, people in Port Moresby. How are you?
It was in like the top 10 cities where we have members. Port Moresby's in there.
Wow. And there's a lot of people in Singapore, obviously. A lot of people in Germany, Nikki. They must be your family and friends. A lot of people in Switzerland. Shanghai. Thank you, Shanghai. That'll be worth going back there again. We love Shanghai.
Big crowd in Amsterdam.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. I think we should go back and say hi to an unusual place each week, but Port Moresby's a ripper. I'm happy with
that. That's right. So this week we're hi to Port Moresby.
Yes. Now,
just before we move on, I just want to do one quick thing. Yes. I'm just shout out to Marty Dodson, who this week put a recipe for me in the group, and it was my favorite Chipotle rice. So last time I mentioned I love Chipotle, and she put in a recipe where I could copy Chipotle rice. So I'm going to do that this week, see how I go.
Yes. Okay. So moving on to the hot topic of the week. And there's a lot of elections going around in our world at the moment. Nikki, you, of course, in Germany have had the recent country elections there. And there is a postal vote taking place in Australia on same-sex marriage. And it had really got me thinking about all of the elections I've missed in my 18 years of being away, and what that has sort of meant to me, and whether I care or don't care, or how I really feel about it. Because what I've found interesting is with the same-sex marriage, it's one of the first times where I've really, really desperately wanted to vote on an issue. Whereas I think with when I was voting for prime ministers or state politicians, it was like, oh, well, my one vote's not going to count. But I feel like my one vote is very important on the issue of same-sex marriage because I feel very strongly about it. But I asked others in the group, how important is it for you as an expat to vote? And do you care, or does it weaken your ties with your country, or do you feel a lesser part of what's going on at home? And also, I was interested in if anyone had ever voted in a country that they weren't a citizen of, and if that was possible. And wow, it was interesting hearing what people said. It was fascinating.
It was really fascinating. And so when we were talking about this, and I did a little bit of research, so I found an article in The Economist that talked about the number of overseas voters in the most recent US election. And then it went on to speak about other countries that have large and influential overseas voting communities. And it says that other countries' diaspora, and I have to tell you, I looked that up, how to pronounce that, because I always used to say diaspora.
Yes.
So a diaspora, in the 2007 French presidential election, candidates visited London to campaign because there are 300,000 French citizens in London, which makes it France's sixth largest city. So in some countries, expats are definitely considered, and they're definitely even catered to. And the article went on to say that in the future, given large populations of overseas voters, it could be that politicians would go overseas to appeal to those particular voters, which I thought was very, very interesting.
Oh, wow. Can you make sure you put the link of that on twofatexpats.com? Because I would love to read that.
I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah. Okay. So Robin said, and I mean, I think we have to point this one thing out too, Nikki, because I'm not sure if everyone's aware that in Australia it is compulsory to vote. So it's actually illegal. If you are on the electoral roll and you don't vote, it's a fine. And I had never considered how this affects the expats of the world until we had this conversation in our group. And that is, a lot of Australians remove themselves from the electoral roll because they know they're going to be overseas and they're going to miss things and they don't want to get fined. Nikki, there were a few Australians who said that they weren't voting because they were non-residents for tax purposes, but you have a different take on this, right?
I do, yeah. So it's my understanding, because I looked into it, when we left Australia, we became non-residents for tax purposes, but we were allowed to be on the electoral roll for 6 years.
Right.
If you intend to return to Australia eventually, then you may remain on the electoral roll. We left Australia for 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah.
And it's 15 years later, 14 years later. So if you leave, and even if you become a non-resident, you may stay on the roll for 6 years, but after 6 years, you have to be removed and you get a letter from the government that tells you you've been removed from the electoral roll. And during that time, you don't have a requirement to vote in council elections, is my understanding. So you only have to vote in state elections and federal elections.
Ah, so you're saying you think it's about 6 years that you can stay on the electoral roll after you've become a non-resident for tax purposes?
Yeah, that's my understanding. So you can be a non-resident, and as long as you have an intention to return to Australia eventually, you can remain on the roll. But after 6 years, they remove you unless you return and revalidate yourself.
Yeah. And then it shows you the different side of it, right, with the Americans. Because like Robin said that she feels that because she still pays taxes and forever will in the US, that she really feels it's important for her to vote. And she said, with things such as they are, my vote seems even more important. I have to say, I really did notice that with a lot of my American friends this time around, because, you know, it's not a legal requirement and it's not compulsory for them. But I really felt that so many of my American friends were very, very focused on voting this time.
But having said that, just because you're a non-tax resident in Australia doesn't mean you don't pay tax. It just means you're in a different tax class. Like, we still pay tax in Australia on things that we have there.
Yeah. So just
on Robin's point, I feel like I'm missing out. I feel disenfranchised, and I have felt, especially this time around, because I'm desperate to vote in the postal survey as well.
Yes.
That I think it's unfair, because we do pay taxes. We do contribute to Australia's economy/community. But then it's interesting, because there were other members of my family who said, well, you've been gone for so long, why should you have a say? So I think that's an interesting point of view as well. But yes, Americans are globally taxed.
Did you really have someone in your family say that? You've been gone so long, so why should you have a say?
Yes. They might have said the argument could be made, why should you have a say?
Yes. That's a very clever way of telling you to eat a poo sandwich, isn't it? But I think that's a whole, you've just opened the can that is the worms that a lot of expats feel when they go home, is, and that is exactly it. And it's the thing you just can't put your finger on with your friends that feel you have no idea, or that you've left, you know, you've gone, what would you know, you're not here, you're not feeling it. That is the perfect example of the thoughts of some friends and family, isn't it, is, you know, that you're out of here, so really your voice doesn't count anymore. And
it's a dilemma, right? Because in my essence, I'm Australian. I feel incredibly patriotic to Australia as a country, and I defend it. It's my whole culture. I mean, that's where I came from. That's where I assume I will return to at some stage, and I've never haven't felt Australian. So I guess it might be different for different people, but for me, it feels important.
Oh, absolutely. And I always feel that expats are little walking ambassadors for their country, right? Because it's that constant conversation, where are you from? And you explaining where you're from, and you getting quite defiant about your people and their beliefs and what you've got to offer and whatever, you know, if people were sort of, I don't know, I think that being an expat does make you think a lot more about where you're from and what your country's about and what your country represents, because you're always having conversations about it. I mean, I certainly didn't walk around the streets of Adelaide saying once a week to people, I'm Australian, whereas I definitely do that here. I'm always, I'm Australian, I'm from Adelaide, we've got a place just out of Adelaide, it looks like this, we've got 71 wineries within a 30-minute radius of our house, because that's the most important thing to me to tell people. And, I want to talk about it. And yeah, I am finding the whole same-sex marriage and not being able to vote on it very hard, because I also think you want to be a part of it, very much so, and I think it's a hugely historic moment. It's something I'd like to share with my children to show a united front. And I feel I've been following friends of mine who are a same-sex couple who did get married, but of course it wasn't legal. I've been watching with horror the stuff that's been pushed under their door and in their faces from people that don't agree with same-sex marriage and what they've had to deal with. I don't know, it's a very emotive situation, isn't it?
It is, and that's why I'm a big fan of Narina, I'm so sorry, I don't know how to pronounce that name, but she says, as a part of the disenfranchised diaspora, I'm constantly lobbying what would be my federal member to push for voting rights for overseas Australians, because it's important for her to have a say in the country of her passport, as well as the place where she pays some tax and has her biggest asset, her home. So I think that that's a good idea, and I've never thought about that before, and I'm going to do the same thing.
Yeah, that is a brilliant idea. I think too often we forget to go local, because, I mean, the truth of the matter is with the same-sex marriage is we voted our local politicians in, and they should be voting on our behalf. There shouldn't even be a postal vote, in my personal opinion, right, is that I feel that it's rude, and I think it's just a slap in the face, that same-sex couples are having to seek the approval of non-same-sex couples to get married. I don't understand. But anyway, moving right along, Mahira also had one of those comments that made you go, sister. She said, great question. I can't necessarily vote in state local elections, but I always vote in the national election in the US. As a woman, I take the right to vote very seriously, because 100 years ago the right didn't exist and still doesn't for some women in the world.
Hear, hear. Very interesting though, because some people it's different. So some people can vote, but their votes aren't necessarily counted. So Natalie says, I always vote in every election, local, state, national, primary and general. So that's a US person. I'm from Florida. Unfortunately, Florida only counts absentee votes if the vote is close. If it's not close enough to matter, they just throw them out. But since you have to vote in advance, it's hard to know. And there's so many other things on the ballot other than just the main race. So in any election where the vote is close, your vote is counted, which I thought was so interesting.
Yeah, it is. It is. I love how politically motivated some of the women in the group are. In Nancy says, I have an internet phone and the last thing before bed lately that I do is call my representatives and tell them they'd better not vote in the latest disaster they're considering, usually healthcare. And she said, I show an ongoing level of engagement.
Yeah, absolutely. And then in relation to your question about can you vote in other countries, so Cheryl is a citizen of three countries, US, Belgium and France, and she votes in all three. She considers it her civic duty to vote and takes it very seriously. In the past, before she became a naturalized Belgian citizen, she was allowed to vote in local elections and she did that as well. So
yeah,
how about that?
I know.
Imagine
having
to keep up with the politics in three countries.
I knew I'd heard of it somewhere, and that's why I asked, because I knew I'd been in a conversation somewhere where someone was explaining all the different countries they were able to vote in. Now, Tammy, who is an Australian, she said, prior to becoming British, I was able to vote in UK elections as a Commonwealth citizen. Qualifying Commonwealth citizens, which means Commonwealth citizens who have leave to remain in the UK or do not require such leave. I came in on a work permit, so I had leave to remain.
And then there's the point of view of sometimes where you pay taxes and you can't vote. So Samantha said it wasn't until the referendum in the UK that she felt the need to cast the vote and have her voice heard. And I guess that that's Brexit. Mm. And in the general election since, she also voted. She said it's hard to keep up with the policies of each side, but she does her best to read and keep up to date, which I do. She said it also looks like time is looming for repatriation. In Canada, there are currently local ward elections being held, as well as new mayoral elections and elections for the Calgary School Board trustees. I can't vote here. It's frustrating at the moment as part of the taxes we pay in Canada go towards Calgary school boards, and they are wanting to make major changes to the funding of schools, which will affect my kids for the duration of our time here. I and many, many expats can't have our voices heard on this issue. Mm. And that's another thing to consider, really, isn't it? Because yeah. in the country you live in, you do pay taxes, and sometimes they're directly streamed in one way or another.
Yes.
And then you don't have any say in it.
Yes, that's right. Ian was saying that as an EU citizen, he voted in the local Italian elections when he lived in Milan. Now, Ian is British, but I love, he said, I voted in the local Italian elections when I lived in Milan, brackets, darling. It said, but not the national elections. I think that's an EU-wide thing. Voted in the UK parliamentary elections while I lived in Australia, which was good. One that was sad was Dania, who said she's just lost all hope in her, and she called it a corrupt country, so we don't vote or care. And I asked her where she was from, and she said Lebanon. But I thought, you know, it just goes to show the different feeling of government and democracy, doesn't it?
Yeah, but I thought it was a fascinating discussion overall, and it was very interesting, and I learned some stuff. Did
yes.
you learn some stuff?
Oh, I did. I really did. And it's what I love about the group, Nikki. I know I bang on and on and on about it all the time. If you're not in the group, come and join the group. Two Fat Expats, and you'll find it under groups. Nikki, we are shutting that page down. We have to shut that page down. It's too confusing. So we need to do that soon. So, yes, let's say, I'm saying it right now, one more week of the Facebook page and then it's only the group. So if you haven't joined the group yet, come and join it now. Podcast, Nikki Moffat, what have you been listening to?
Well, the New York Times has a podcast called The Daily, and I've talked about The Daily before, which is kind of a big deep dive into news stories every day. And The Daily has given birth to a new podcast, like a sub-podcast, called The New Washington. And it's about players in the New Washington. So since the new administration came in, sort of who's there. And I listen to it every week, and I find it fascinating every week. But this week was absolutely mind-blowing. It's called Lobbying in the Trump Era is the name of the episode, and I'll put that in the show notes. But it's stories of people who've made it big on the back of the election of Donald Trump. So when he was being elected, people who were working for him were not people who were necessarily Republicans, not necessarily mainstream political people. So he had sort of all these people that would have been the fourth or fifth option. And then there's one guy, this podcast is about a guy called Strick, who jumped on board. And during the campaign, he had some Trump staffers stay at his house, and he had a sign in his yard. And he used to be a lobbyist in the vinyl industry, and he sort of came in, got in good with the campaign. Then after the campaign, somebody called him, because this campaign staff was very small because they didn't have this large traditional sort of staff. Someone from New Zealand called him and said they were trying to get in contact with the Trump campaign, with the president. And so he called a few people and hooked up the government of New Zealand with the Trump government.
Oh my God.
And got this call through. Like, just this guy who was no one. And now he runs this multi-million dollar a year lobbying industry where he lobbies on behalf of loads of countries. He sort of just came from nowhere and nothing and just has become this sort of relatively medium-sized fish in the New Washington.
Wow.
So it's just fascinating.
Yeah.
Just the whole thing is fascinating. All the information and facts on here, I mean, it's just amazing. And you'd think, why would countries need lobbyists? Like, why does a country need a lobbyist? Why don't they just go to the State Department? Well, because the State Department hasn't filled loads and loads of positions. So the people that the countries used to call to say, hey, can we talk to you about this? They're not there. So, in fact, they have to employ a lobbyist to try and find someone in the government for them to talk to. It's so fascinating. I just think anyone would, even if they weren't obsessed with US politics like I am.
Nikki, have you heard about the new podcast coming out with the LA Times called Dirty John?
I have not.
The promo is so good. So I don't think it's out until about the first week of October, but I have seen the promo, heard the promo. I have already subscribed because I cannot wait to hear this. And it's called Dirty John. It's produced by the LA Times. It's the story of a woman who marries a man with a big, big secret. He is supposedly a doctor or a surgeon, and you sort of hear about her meeting him, falling in love with him, how he was just completely obsessed with her, that he went off to work every day to go and be a surgeon, but there is a secret and a simmering anger. And all you hear in the promo is her sort of saying, and then he got a letter from someone in jail. And I was thinking, why would someone in jail be contacting him? And he got so angry. And it's just one of those promos where you're like, oh my God, is he really a doctor? What's going to happen? So that's when I've got my eye out on. So I will go back to that. And I also need to go back to The Hidden Brain. And so I'll come back next week and talk about The Hidden Brain next week. But books this week for me, I have been reading Hug Your Haters, which is by Jay, and I think you pronounce it Beer or Bayer. It's B-A-E-R. And it's a book I'd heard about recently on a conference I was on. I went to a conference for sort of social media community managers recently, and it was a suggested book. And I have just found it really interesting. I think if any of our listeners out there work, either work in customer service or have a business or do anything where they have clients, it is a really, really sort of deep dive into how the world of customer service has changed in the online world. And they said customer service is a spectator sport, which it is now, in that so many of the businesses that we use have Facebook pages or Twitter accounts or social media where all of that feedback comes back and hits them in the face in front of everyone. You know, there's no private little complaints department anymore where it all stays within the box, you know, over the call. It's out there for everyone to see. And I met a woman when I was on the conference who worked for a huge telecom company, and she actually said to me when we were talking about Facebook, oh, Facebook has become our complaints department. And it was a real epiphany for me of, yeah, that's exactly what it is, isn't it? It's everybody's chance to just go online in this public forum and say, you suck. So I've actually read the book once, and I'm now doing it as an audiobook. I found it that good. And I guess the thing is too, it's very easy because I do manage social media pages. And I think sometimes when someone's abrupt and awful, it's easier just to not answer in the, oh God, you know, how do I even attack that? You know, how do I even go there when someone's so nasty and vile, or, you know, seems so unhappy. But it's just a great book for handling those situations. So I just thought, if we have any other business owners or community managers, because I know community management is a big thing for travellers because it's a job you can do online and, you know, and you can do from anywhere. So that's my one, Hug Your Haters. What about you? What are you reading or listening to?
Well, I'm I'm listening to Unfinished Business, Women, Men, Work, Family by Anne-Marie Slaughter, who wrote that Atlantic article that you love.
I love that article, yeah.
And it's about choosing family over career, or as an equally important factor, and talks about the world as it is rather than the one you would like it to be. And it's so interesting. I'm not even nearly finished, but she's just done a chapter on comparing herself to Sheryl Sandberg and talking about Lean In and how when she was 43 with two young kids and sort of at a good point in her career, she probably would have written the same book. But now that she's a bit older and she has, because she had children a little bit later, and she has older children, and then she had an experience working in Washington, and she said she would have written a different book, and that's the book she's writing. So I just thought it was very interesting. So she talks about where she agrees with Lean In, the book, and where she thinks that she sort of has a different philosophy. Anyway, I'm loving it. I think it's fantastic. So I'm going to push on with that this week.
Okay, so screens. This one's an interesting one, Nikki. So we are continuing on with the inappropriate lovesick, which gets more and more inappropriate each week. Last night's height of inappropriateness was when a couple went into a hotel room and he pulled out a big, massive red I don't even know if we can say it on this podcast because we've said it's not explicit, but,
it's
an aid of some description, and it was massive. And I just thought, oh my God, Mr. 11 sitting right next to me. And I thought, oh God. And he said to me, why has he got that? Wouldn't she want that? And I thought, my gosh, how do you even know that? How do you know that that's not a candlestick? Anyway, but we moved on because we're, still making our way through the rest of the Australian Survivor, and we're now streaming the Australian Bachelorette with Sophie Monk.
Oh, no, with Sophie Monk.
Yes. But I said to the kids, oh, I've got a great one on Netflix. I want us to watch Jack Whitehall Travels with My Father. I'd seen the shorts of it, and Jack Whitehall, I've only sort of really seen him. He's a stand-up comedian. I think he's been in a couple of movies. He is very much a regular on Graham Norton. It's almost like every time someone doesn't show up on Graham Norton, they quickly bring Jack Whitehall in because he's very, very funny. Very, very funny. And I'd seen the shorts that he'd done a documentary with his father where he goes on a gap year and takes his father with him. His father's very posh, probably, late 60s, and, this was all going to be very funny because off they went, to stay in hostels and do whatever. I have to say, Nick, it was really disappointing. It wasn't what we thought it was going to be at all. It wasn't as funny. It seemed almost too staged, so to speak. To give you an example, they walk into the hostel, there's all these people appropriately placed on each bed, that say hello to them all as they walk in. It didn't feel real, and it felt like there'd been a lot of planning to go into something.
Too much production.
Yes.
Too much pre-production.
Way too much pre-production. So we watched one episode. My little guy said the next day, should we watch that again? And both Greg and I were like, no. It wasn't what I thought.
Let's go back to that show with the big thing.
Yes.
The plastic.
What about you, though? Okay. What are you watching?
Well, this week I watched something that I have never seen, and I've obviously been missing out because it's had 6 seasons and I've never seen an episode, Call the Midwife.
Have you ever watched an episode? Oh, love it. We've watched them all. I love it, love it, love it. One of my favourite shows.
I was shocked to see that it could go for 6 seasons and I've never seen it. So I'm assuming that everyone listening has seen Call the Midwife, but it's a young, newly qualified midwife in the UK and goes to somewhere that she's not at all familiar with and a different socioeconomic group than she's familiar with and dealing with it. It's in post-war Britain, right?
Yes.
I think it's post-war Britain, yeah.
It is bloody brilliant. It is such a good show and just shows you sort of women of that era and what they had to live with. And of course, I love anything where there's babies and babies arriving or baby tales and whatever. But yeah, those women are really something, aren't they? Love Call the Midwife. I think it was a book.
Yes.
I think it was a book first.
Yes, I think it was. And then the other thing I watched.
Excuse the drill in the background. New house, don't have any curtains. The man's just come to put the curtains up. So we did have a little, should just say, Nikki, that we did have a little interlude where I ran downstairs to open the door and let the curtain man in, and he's now down there drilling a hole in the wall. So off we go. Just ignore us.
We'll wrap up quickly, but yes, quickly. I did watch one more new show last night because the US has kicked off its new season, the fall season of shows, so all my favourite shows will be back on soon. There is a new show on ABC called The Good Doctor. It's a US show, but it's based on a Korean show of the same name with the same premise, and it has an autistic main character. So the main character is a doctor and he's gone to work in a hospital and he's a savant. So it's one of the very rare cases of autism where the person has perfect recall on particular things. So I thought it was quite interesting. I thought it was interesting. It was based on a Korean show because a study in Korea in 2011 in 50,000 children, I think, showed an incident of 1 in 38 children on the autistic spectrum.
What are the numbers in, say, a country like America or Australia? It's 1 in how many?
Well, it's 1. My son was lamenting this morning. He said, I had a 1 in 100 chance and I got the 1.
Oh.
So we had a conversation about that. But it's generally considered to be somewhere between 1 in 68 and 1 in 98.
Right.
So that's what it is. But the study in Korea was quite extensive. And what it said was that perhaps it's not more prevalent in Korea, but just that their study was better. And the other thing is that there are a lot of undiagnosed cases. So if you did a study and actually got everybody who's on any part of the spectrum sort of diagnosed, then you might find a different number or a number similar to Korea. So anyway.
Wow.
Anyway, I started watching it and I think I'll watch it again next week, although I don't know if I'll watch it always, but I quite enjoyed it.
Sounds good.
Got pretty good production.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah.
Okay, Nikki, just before we go, I want to ask people, please, 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 if you enjoyed this podcast, would you mind going onto iTunes and giving us a rating or a review? We haven't asked people to do reviews for a long time and it's really obvious. I think we've got... I reckon we're up to about 92 reviews in just, I can only see the Australian iTunes. I'm not sure about the Americans or the UK one. But we are in desperate need of some new reviews or ratings. So if you are on iTunes, just excuse my curtain hanger. If you are on iTunes, please come and give us a review. I would really, really appreciate it. Nikki, have I missed anything? Are we allowed to go now? Can I put everybody out of their misery?
We can go.
And yay, hooray, I will have curtains and so I won't have to do all of my getting changed in the bathroom and turning off all the lights before I walk back in to go to bed because we are on full display to our neighbours.
Perfect. Well, I'm sorry to hear about the neighbours' lost opportunities, but I'm glad to hear about it. All right, I'll speak to you again next week.
See you next week. Bye.